From SDPB Radio, I'm Lori Walsh, and you're listening to In the Moment. And welcome to this week's news podcast. South Dakota has joined more than 30 other states in seeing vaping-related acute respiratory illnesses. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention has advised Americans to forego vaping during an ongoing investigation into an epidemic of e-cigarette-related illness. Doctors are also keeping pace with the latest developments. Dr. Dan Heineman of Sanford Health joined us to explain why your healthcare provider might be asking more questions about your vaping habits. What do we know about this respiratory illness so far?
Well, we know that it is probably related to some reaction to inhaled chemicals and/or substances, that it can be very confusing and look much like a typical respiratory illness and or even a typical pneumonia on x-ray and the clinical findings. But there's also some clues. So it is seen in patients who have been vaping within a certain number of days prior to the onset of the illness, 3 months, 90 days, and that there does not appear to be any improvement with routine standard treatments that one might start with if you think one has a pneumonia. So that's what we're trying to make sure our clinicians understand. Ask those questions about the vaping, and if it doesn't seem to fit a traditional diagnosis of pneumonia, then probably need to entertain that this is a pulmonary disease associated with e-cigarette use.
Nicotine delivery devices have been on the market for a while. Are there thoughts on why we're seeing this now?
I don't know that anybody can answer that question yet. Even the CDC is still trying to grapple with that and to trying to find out, is it that as enough people come in contact with these devices, we're seeing certain individuals have this reaction? Is it that that people are inhaling different types of chemicals? I don't know that the CDC in its evaluation yet understands the exact cause, and there's ongoing research in trying to understand that. And so then maybe there'll be better answers as to why some individuals who vape seem to have this issue.
So the FDA this week criticized the company Juul, who is a producer of nicotine delivery devices or e-cigarettes, for advertising that these are safer than combustible cigarettes or traditional cigarettes. And so we're having that debate, too. Many people are using these devices as, a harm reduction device. It's better than smoking a cigarette. Two questions come out of that. And the first one would be, are you concerned that more people will go back to, as a precautionary measure, people who are addicted to nicotine? Are you concerned about them going back to a cigarette, which has its own ramifications?
Well, both of them are addictive substances. And replacing one addictive substance with another isn't necessarily appropriate. Physicians have always felt that whatever the addictive substance is, we should try to reduce it and reduce our dependence on it, whether that's a nicotine delivery device and or a cigarette. We used to think that the cigarettes had more toxic and damaging chemicals and particles in them. I think now we're seeing that these devices may not be as safe as people thought. Medicine has never embraced them as an evidence-based way to stop smoking. We've always encouraged the patients who talk to us to get into evidence-based smoking cessation programs with approved and appropriate medications, the chewing gums, the variety of nicotine replacement strategies that have been out there, as well as some prescription medications that have been shown to be helpful. Those are evidence-based and do not appear to have a reduced harm profile, if you will. And so those are the things that we would recommend. And we would recommend if you want to continue or quit both or all of these devices talk to your primary care clinician and or get involved with the quit line at the state of South Dakota, or investigate what services are available in your community to help you stop smoking.
Research shows that the suicide rate in the ag industry is 5 times higher than the national average. Pressures include worries about market prices, social isolation, and the ever-present stigma related to seeking mental health services. September is Suicide Prevention Month, and we wanted to spend time with South Dakota state leaders to talk about how we can better prevent suicide for every South Dakotan. I just want to point out that when three people at this level of state government show up to talk about suicide, you're serious about talking about suicide. Secretary Gill, tell us a little bit about why it's important to just have this conversation, because there was a time when people didn't want to talk about it and thought if we talked about it, it would create more problems than solutions.
That's right. And, you know, over time, that is exactly what has happened with various situations. It used to be historically the thought, just as you said, that if you talked about something too much, it would give people ideas, they would go in the wrong direction. But what we found is that this truly is a public health issue. We do need to do a lot of work collectively with our government agencies and along with community partnerships to get the word out, raise awareness about the fact that everyday people face a lot of the same issues, and that there is help and there is nothing wrong with talking about prevention and getting assistance.
Dr. Clayton, we're not real proud of having the 6th highest suicide rate in the nation. Tell us statistically where we rank and what this picture looks like in the state. What do we know?
Yeah, so we are dealing with, unfortunately, high levels of suicide in South Dakota. For our 2017 data, we rank 6th overall among states with 192 suicide deaths, which is the highest recorded in South Dakota history in 2015, 2017, and then 2018 rounds out the top three kind of years in terms of numbers of suicides.
We're going to talk about some of the programs and the organized efforts that the state is working on. But first, Tiffany, let's just deal with this right away. And how do you know when someone is in crisis?
Sure. I think that's a great question. I think it can vary by individual. You know, when you know someone well, you can see those behavior changes or maybe a change in their mood where they're just not that same person they used to be. You know the things you hear about, they're giving away their belongings, they're talking in terms that maybe they don't normally talk about. That's probably on the extreme side, but just some of those behavior changes that you may see where they're not engaging in some of the activities that they used to really enjoy or have a passion for, if they're withdrawing. You know, those would be the things that you would want to look for. And then it's okay to ask them. It's okay to ask them how they're doing, or if you suspect they're feeling, you know, that there could be a suicidal situation going on, to ask about that. And then to help them get help. I think that's the most important thing, is get them connected with someone that they can visit with.
How do you ask them? Do you come right out and use the word?
I would recommend, yeah, being direct. I care about you. I love you. I'm concerned about you. Are you feeling suicidal?
Lori, let's talk about this big picture a little bit and efforts across the state.
Sure. Well, one important thing that we have going on is an interagency work group. And if you can imagine, within state government, there's various agencies that have a concern about the data and what's happening with the suicide rates. We know that there are various target groups that the data shows are impacted. We talk about farmers, we talk about military families, we talk about youth, and we have various agencies that are working with those target populations. We have the ability to provide feedback out there on a website that has been created. So that is a one call to action that we have for people to go out there, take a look at our strategic plan and provide us feedback. That website is sdsuicideprevention.org. So we hope that we can get some responses there. And then our hope is to finalize a strategic plan and get that released in 2019 of October, coming up here, so that we can actually start taking some of the things that we're learning from that and getting some ideas rolling and getting some projects rolling.
Help put into context sort of these efforts at suicide prevention from awareness and connection and treatment and intervention versus this broader policy of, broader policy issues that people want changed that aren't going to necessarily change overnight for them.
Sure. I think that's a great question. It's hard when, suicide at times can come on with individuals who traditionally don't have mental health type challenges. We're seeing that with our ag community, where these crises, these situational situations are bringing a level of stress that folks maybe just aren't accustomed to, aren't sure how to deal with, aren't sure where to go to seek help, or the stigma of asking for help can be too much for them. We do have the grant through FEMA to help do some outreach into those communities, those agricultural communities that have been impacted through the community mental health centers. They have some outreach going on, doing local community events, really opening up the conversation and saying it's okay to ask for help.
The South Dakota Farm and Ranch Stress Summit provides mental health training and suicide prevention while offering tools for counselors, agribusiness people, and community members on how to recognize and help those in the ag community who are experiencing chronic stress. Now, the summit takes place on September 23rd through the 25th at the Arrowwood Cedar Shore Resort and Conference Center in Oklahoma. Krista Ehlert, assistant professor and extension range state specialist with South Dakota State University, brought us some details. Before we get into sort of the details of this, let's give an overview for who this summit is for. How are people interacting with it?
So we're hosting the South Dakota Farm and Ranch Stress Summit coming up sort of near the end of September, because I was on your show, I think that it was back in April when we started doing the farm stress workshops as part of our SDSU extension efforts. And those workshops have really led to this summit happening, in that, not only has this been sort of a crisis within the agricultural community leading up to today, but then we also have just that compounding factors of the weather events that we've had this year. Like you just mentioned, Sioux Falls just had that tornado, and we're also seeing an increase in suicides within South Dakota. And because it's such a rural state, that's something that we're really hoping we can get both the ag community and the counseling community to come together to learn how to interact better with each other. And we're hoping that will happen at the Farm and Ranch Stress Summit.
The suicide numbers are higher than that among military veterans, which I think would be a surprise to a lot of people. It's a serious topic. As you do these workshops, as you have done these workshops, and as you said, you've talked with us about it before, are you finding an increased willingness in people to talk in rural South Dakota about some of the stresses and some of the troubles that they're having?
I think there is, I don't want to say like an increased acceptance of talking about mental health within the agriculture community, but I think that we're headed there. And I also think that a lot of things are coming to a head, in that, like I mentioned, we have all these factors that are just kind of piling on top of each other. And then we also at the same time are having these transitions happen on our farms and ranches within South Dakota, where the parents, their generation, they were around for the farm crisis of the 80s. And some of those parents are still carrying debt that they restructured from the 80s. And you're talking about people who have massive amounts of debt, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they're trying to handle that at the same time that they want to pass on their place, their operation, to the next generation, their sons and daughters. And how do you do that and have those conversations about that debt, what it means for the family, and ultimately what it means for the operation that is really the lifeblood of that family?
One of the challenges also seems to be that for some of these problems, there can be pockets of because the weather is hitting a certain part of the state particularly hard, or because of, you know, an increase in tariffs on soybeans, and then all, you know, the soybean mm-hmm. farmers who are all in your circle are having the same problem, there can be a tendency for people not to say anything because somebody else has it worse. There's power in opening up about all the feelings, right?
There most certainly is, and I couldn't agree more. And one of my colleagues, Dr. Andrea Bjornstad, she is our state extension mental health specialist with South Dakota State University, and she with another colleague, it was kind of eye-opening in that they did surveys of about 600 farmers and ranchers from our state in South Dakota, Kansas, Missouri, as well as Michigan. And the participants, so those actual farmers and ranchers, Lori, were asked to sort of rank what their biggest stressors were. And the highest, most ranked thing was the market prices for crops and livestock. And the second highest stressor was the weather. And the third highest was healthcare costs. And pretty much all of those, they don't have control over.
Talk to us about chronic stress, because you think of that big event, that large weather event, but a lot of what you're sort of laying out as farmers and producers list what are the things that are stressful to them. These are ongoing things that takes a sort of a chronic toll.
They do take a chronic toll, and so chronic stress is something that, you know, lasts. It's kind of the same as like feeling anxious or depressed, right? Someone can, you know, in the day or in the moment say, I'm anxious, and, you know, you kind of have like heart palpitations and you always feel nervous or not confident, let's say. Well, if those feelings last for more than 2 weeks, that is, then you are anxious or you are depressed or you have chronic stress. And that's when it's time to sort of evaluate what's going on, what you have control over, what you don't, and also to consider when and how you should get help. Because, I mean, quite frankly, if we don't have farmers and ranchers on the ground who are functioning, you know, at capacity, both in terms of their production and, excuse me, more importantly, in terms of their mental health, we're not going to have farmers and ranchers on the ground in South Dakota who are providing all of that ag economic value to our state. And that's going to have large repercussions for all of us. And quite frankly, that's going to affect our jobs and other economic factors in our state. So, I think it's important that people realize that it's not an isolated thing in terms of the stressors that South Dakota ag is feeling, and it's nationwide, and trade wars and weather and things that people have no control over don't help. But it's having those conversations and getting, like I said, both ag people and counselors on the same page and working together to ultimately have a larger impact together, so that we can have resilient minds on the ground in our farmers and ranchers, and that's going to translate into resilient farms and ranches too.
This week, disaster struck the city of Sioux Falls when what turned out to be 3 tornadoes touched down in different parts of the city. We look back now at how the story unfolded. Let's start with Todd Heidkamp. He's meteorologist in charge with the National Weather Service in Sioux Falls. I caught up with him as he gathered data regarding the Sioux Falls tornado before we really knew what had hit us.
Well, we're at 41st and Kiwanis. We're at a strip mall where Pizza Ranch and Tuesday Morning Retail, as well as Original Pancakes, are housed. And obviously, this building sustained quite a bit of damage during the storm last night.
All right, so what are you doing out here? What's your role right now?
The role is putting the pieces of the puzzle together to figure out how strong the winds were during the storm last night, and also what caused the damage. Because obviously, we had strong winds all around the city of Sioux Falls last night. But obviously, here in this area, we've had enhanced damage. And so what we're looking at right now is, okay, how strong was the tornado? How long was it on the ground? Those are all things I'm trying to determine by looking at the debris.
All right, was this building under construction?
No, as far as I know, it was not. It was open, and it's definitely been impacted by the storm. I mean, it's severely damaged.
So tell us, when we say severely damaged for radio listeners,
the roof is totally gone, and so obviously you have to repair that, and so the structure itself has been compromised. But there's a number of other things that are wrong. You know, the doors are gone in many of the locations, windows are shattered, so there's a lot of work to be done.
All right, where are you headed to next? Where are you seeing other damage?
I'll probably go down to the Avera Heart Hospital, take a look at that, but also I want to move up a little bit closer in the neighborhood, further to the north of the neighborhood here, and find out where the tornado actually started.
All right, hi, Kent. Thanks so much. Be safe.
You bet. Thanks.
Gaylene Stocco and Dan Darkow own Dreamers Outlet in the strip mall at 41st and Kiwanis in Sioux Falls. Here's how I found them the morning after the tornado.
Tell us about your store. Before. Tell us about your store earlier in the week.
Well, before our store was wholesale mattresses to the public. So everything was 40 to 80, you know, percent off retail, but I don't want this to be a commercial. What we were doing was trying to help those that can't necessarily afford retail prices and don't want to buy used. So my most expensive bed's this one right up in front here. I know you can't see that on radio, but this one up in front, there's a place in town that sells it for over $6,000. I sell it for $1,600. So needless to say, we're trying to help any and everybody out the best we can.
Just get a place to sleep.
A good night's sleep, yeah, absolutely.
Tell us about what you see now in front of you today. Describe it.
A new beginning.
New beginning.
Well, you know, both Dan and I, this is something that we wanted, our own business, so that we could help other people. And I've always been one that says everything happens for a reason, so maybe we're just not meant to be in this spot and there's a better location for us so that we can help more people. So now you get to hear the typical phrase that most people say: we just rebuild, we clean up, we rebuild, we start all over, a new beginning.
This can all be replaced. We're just glad nobody died and nobody got hurt. You know, you're right on the money. It's just a matter of, this is all material stuff. It means nothing.
When did you first find out that there had been some kind of storm? Now, we don't know yet if a tornado touched down here, if this is winds.
I haven't been to sleep yet.
You have not had that good night's sleep.
No. Last night, a buddy of mine was at the house, and we were working on some DJ equipment because I DJ on the side. And he said, oh, I just heard that there was a big tornado or something that went through over at the Advanced Auto. And I thought, Advanced Auto is in my backyard, so I should go check out the store. So 1 o'clock, I came down here and saw this gigantic hole, which is now my front entrance to my store.
There doesn't look, I mean, I see insulation and broken glass and mattresses buried under girding and steel everywhere, insulation dangling from wires. It doesn't look like there's anything in here you're going to salvage. What are your thoughts about, is this a total loss as you look at it from a business perspective?
From what we can see or what we can tell, yeah, it looks like a total loss, but we're not the experts, so we'll leave that to those who know.
What's your first step then? When do you get some sleep?
I actually got sleep last night. He didn't wake me up. He showed me a video this morning. And then I came down here. And shock. First thought was just numb. Now it's just, you know, processing and realizing that, like Dan said, this is all material stuff. There are some family mementos, some personal items in here that we're hoping to find, but in looking at this, it's probably a very slim chance that we'll find those. But we're gonna rebuild somewhere else and start over and
Why didn't you wake her up?
She has enough going on, and she just doesn't need to worry about it. She, one of us had to get some sleep and have coherent thoughts during the day. It might as well be her.
A kindness. There were a few hours that she didn't know yet.
A lot of hours.
Yeah,
she got up about 6. I'd known since at least 1. Yeah. So it's just who we are. We don't need to wake the other one up just to say, oh, you ain't going to believe this. That isn't who we are. Again, all material stuff, it can all go away. We'll be fine.
You have each other.
We have each other.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's too much, but other times it's just fine. So, yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for talking with us.
You're welcome.
Mick Gibbs is president and CEO of Avera Heart Hospital in Sioux Falls. He stopped by the SDPB Sioux Falls studios to tell the story of doctors performing emergency heart surgery as the tornado brushed the facility. Tell us an overall picture of where you're located at so people can have a sort of mental map in their heads here.
So geographically, we are in the south end of Sioux Falls and a little bit to the west. So we are south of 229 and Louise, the intersection of 229 and Louise in that general area.
So at what point this morning or last night do you realize there is a problem with this storm?
So I get a call at about 11:30 last night, and the suggestion was that there was damage to our roof and broken windows. And so I got ready and got to work by 11:45 to personally assess the situation.
And what did you find when you arrived? Exactly what you expected to find, yeah.
Worse. It was a remarkable damage to the south-facing side of our building, and it was jarring, to say the least. But I realized that meant we had to ready ourselves to respond, because as a heart hospital, we are dedicated to saving lives. And I realized that if we can't prepare ourselves to get back into service, then there are consequences.
Right. So this is a place where people go when they're having an emergency as well.
In fact, yes, indeed, yeah. Laurie. And in fact, as the tornado traced over the top of the heart hospital, there was a patient on the table having an emergency heart attack response procedure, so a cath procedure, as the tornado traced over the top. And so the staff in the cath lab, their ears popped, and the building felt a shake, or they felt a shake in the building. And this patient is doing wonderful and recovering as best as we could have ever hoped, even under normal circumstances. And so it really demonstrates the steady hand of the team at the Avera Heart Hospital.
Did the doctors who were in and the medical professionals in that room have any idea that was coming, or was that something that was they didn't know what it was,
right,
as it was happening? They just knew it was something and they had to keep going.
They knew they had to keep their focus.
Right.
And unfortunately, they were so busy all evening that they wouldn't have had any indication of what was going on outside,
right,
of the cath lab.
All right, so what are the first things that you do as a president now that you sort of see this damage? You have a big picture. You've got to make preparations. What do you do first?
I do. So first, you have to keep a steady hand. You have to show calm, steady resolve and demonstrate a plan for your team to get back to normal operations, or as normal as you can make them given the circumstances. And so we called in an incident command team at approximately 11:46. If I said I walked onto the campus at 11:45, it took me no time to say we need a team of people to respond to a variety of logistics, operations, planning, supplies. Nutrition is something that we oftentimes forget in crises. We don't eat. We don't nourish ourselves. And so in this case, we have to make sure we have all those things ready. So we called people in from their home through a process called a calling tree. And you just assign people to start drawing, going through the calling tree and calling people in and seeing who can, who's able to. Keeping in mind that we're still in the middle of a storm, and right, it was not easy to pass 69th Street to the Heart Hospital. And I have the fortune of having a high vehicle that could navigate, but not everybody has a vehicle with high clearance. So those are all variables you have to factor in. So it's not algebra, it's calculus.
Right. What's the situation like right now as far as patients and staff in the facilities?
Mm-hmm. So We are full of patients. Right. We did not have to divert any patients from the Avera Heart Hospital. Now, we received some patients that were diverted, but we ourselves were able to maintain full functionality, even though, as I walked in, the lobby, the windows in the south side of the building were all broken out, or all busted. But in patient care areas, and maybe by the sheer grace of God, the patient care areas did not have broken windows. So I was pleased to see that we could continue to provide patient care. We had power, we had water, we had all the necessary utilities to continue to function.
For people who have appointments, for people who have emergencies, what's your message to them as far as connecting with the Heart Hospital today and into the following, because there's more weather on the way.
Indeed. So we canceled all elective procedures and all elective visits today, and then we'll begin rolling those back out starting tomorrow and into next week when we have every reason to believe we'll be at full functionality. And the only reason we're at full functionality is a partnership between the city, its agencies, as well as private entities who, by 9:30 this morning, our entire parking lot, which was littered with trees, and was completely cleared and ready for vehicles. And unfortunately, when I say littered with trees, that means the staff who were taking care of that patient in that cath lab, their cars were destroyed by either trees or debris or just the pressure between the inside of the vehicle and the outside with the storm. Their windows blew out. So part of my job as a CEO was to find them rides, to get them home so they could rest and be ready for the next scheduled shift.
Structural damage to the building, you've had that assessed?
All cosmetic damage, no structural damage. We had engineers on the roof last night making sure that there wasn't any serious damage to the roof, and the building itself is extremely sound, but we do have broken windows that will have plywood up to protect from any rain today or tomorrow.
What can you tell us about other Avera buildings? We're hearing reports about Avera Behavioral Health. What do you know?
Yeah, so as their neighbor, I know a little bit. We took some of their patients last night, and the tornado hit them more intensely than it hit us. So we were on the edge of the heart of the funnel, and they were right in the heart of the funnel. So they're still assessing, but I do believe that they have some patients still in the Avera Behavioral Health Center, and some of their patients have gone on to McKinnon or, like I said, to the Heart Hospital.
What do you want to say to your staff? You know, clearly you think maybe first about patients and patient care and really the mission that Avera has, but what do you want to say to those staff members who not only stayed last night, but who are going to do the hard work, you know, throughout the following days in communication, in nutrition, in patient care, in administration, and the list goes on. What have you already seen from them, and what do you want to say to them going forward?
So my extreme appreciation for their level of commitment. So we go from saving lives to the kind of heroic behavior I saw last night, which was awe-inspiring. So there are hundreds of people that have not gone to bed yet from the Avera Heart Hospital cleaning up debris. As we speak here on today, they're still cleaning up debris and making sure that we can get that building back to serving patients. And it is, I don't know what to say other than it is makes me extremely proud to be part of this family.
Gretchen Jelmstad with the American Red Cross Dakotas region provided an update on the emergency shelter established in the Armory building at the Sioux Falls Fairgrounds. All right, give us an update of the storm and efforts of the Red Cross today in the city of Sioux Falls.
The Red Cross was contacted early this morning and by our emergency partners in Sioux Falls. There, they set up an emergency operations center with the city and emergency management and fire officials and all of that. And so we were contacted to open an emergency shelter at the fairgrounds. So we have volunteers out there who are, they've got, you know, cots and blankets and snacks and beverages. There's power to that building, and so that's great if anybody needs to charge their phone and that sort of thing. But really, if anybody needs a safe place to stay, go ahead and go out to the Sioux Empire Fairgrounds. We're in the Armory building at 100 North Lyon Boulevard in Sioux Falls, and we'll be there as long as we're needed just to support the community and help in any way that we can.
Do you have any indication at this point of how many people are utilizing that service? Are people showing up?
We have had people kind of in and out, and, you know, like I mentioned, whether it's just to charge their cell phone for a little bit or catch a little bit of sleep if they were up all night with the storm. So we have had people, I don't have a hard number for you, but we have had people in and out kind of all throughout the morning. And just really however we can help them with information updates or if they just need a quick snack or something like that, we'll be there to support the community as long as that resource is needed.
And give us an idea of how long, do you have a plan of how long that might be at this point? When do you start making those kinds of decisions?
You know, we'll just continue to work with the other emergency response agencies. And so the emergency management, the city of Sioux Falls, and we really base it off of that and off of the needs of the community. And so I don't have a time frame for that. The other thing that is will go along with this is the damage assessment. And so, you know, quite a bit of the damage is commercial property, but if there are residential properties that are affected, then the shelter may stay open longer. If people aren't, if it's not safe to stay in their home, or if there's an extended period of time with no power, that sort of thing. And so all of those factors will kind of determine how long this shelter stays open. It could be closed tonight if everybody's able to go back into their homes and it's safe to do that, to get back into the neighborhoods, or we could be open for several days. And so we're prepared to do that, whatever the circumstances may be. But we'll just continue to work with the city to determine what that need is.
And for people who want to volunteer, they want to be of service, what is your message to them? How can people help?
Yeah, a big thanks to our local volunteers who are helping already at that shelter. The Red Cross utilizes our trained volunteers in situations like this. We do have some rules and regulations as far as safety in shelters and, you know, food handling and that sort of thing. But if you'd like to help today, you can contact 211. And they're taking volunteers to help with debris cleanup and that sort of thing. And if you're interested in becoming a Red Cross volunteer, you know, to help out maybe in the future, we'd absolutely love to have you. You just go to redcross.org and get signed up that way.
Now, after the tornado, rain, and more rain, and not just in Sioux Falls. Submerged roads, flooded homes and businesses, communities like Madison and Parkston and Del Rapids all suffering. More rain means more flooding in South Dakota. Mike Gillespie is a hydrologist with the National Weather Service. He brought us an update. How is this unprecedented? Is this sort of one of those things that just happens in, what I mean specifically is that at this time of year, we would be seeing the same kind of flood levels that we saw in spring in South Dakota?
Yeah, it is very rare how long the flooding has persisted in many of these areas this year. The James River, it has happened before where we've gone from late February, early March, all the way through September and October being above flood stage. So that has happened before, but it's very rare. And the amount of precipitation that we've seen here the last couple days in these areas is very extreme, if not record levels. Haven't had a chance to really dig into what the two-day records are for a lot of these areas, particularly in September. You know, normally if you're going to get your heavy rains, it's going to be more in the summertime. But for September, this is a very wet event, and these kind of flood levels, it's been quite a while since we've seen these kind of flood levels this late in the year.
All right. So as we look at September, we start thinking things like what happens when it freezes. And I know that's a hard thing to predict because it's still, you know, early, mid-September. But what does happen if the water ends up being at flood stage when we go into winter? What does that mean for spring?
The water that's sitting above ground, if it freezes, you know, in the floodplain on a field or something like that, that's probably not going to be the too big of a concern because nobody's trying to plant crops or grow crops or anything like that in the winter. The biggest concern will be with the water that's in the soils, that soil moisture, you know, the saturated soils. If we go into the winter with those soils still very saturated, it's really setting the stage for additional problems come next spring again. I like to use the analogy of a sponge. You put a dry sponge in the freezer and then pull it out, dump some water on it. Some of that water is still going to soak in because of the air holes in the sponge. You take a wet sponge that's saturated, put it in the freezer, dump water on it, it's all going to run off. So if we go into the winter and start getting these freezing temperatures while the soils are still saturated, it really is setting the stage for additional problems come next spring.
As Sioux Falls residents shared photos online of patio tables embedded into the sides of houses and trees frosted with insulation, we paused to stand in awe of the power of a tornado. As residents tossed the evidence of the 2019 tornadoes into their dumpsters, we looked back at what remains of another Sioux Falls tornado, this one from July of 1932. Kevin Gans is curator of education at the Siouxland Heritage Museums. He joined us with a story. Not our first tornado,
not
for sure.
Not our first tornado. Probably won't be our last, but right. let's not hope.
But so. Let's go back to 1932, because this is a different time, and we have some pretty clear evidence of what this tornado was like.
It's one of those stories that starts out just like everything. It was a beautiful day, and everybody was out. You know, it was a Saturday. Everybody was out, and there were people playing golf at Minnehaha. There were people in the parks having picnics. And, you know, it's one of those things. The afternoon starts getting dark and gray, and everybody's looking up, and you know, they start leaving. And pretty soon, a pretty fantastic tornado is going to rip through the city.
Mm. And there's really not the kind of warnings that we have now either. So really looking to the sky to sort of find out that something's coming.
Well, you know, even when you look back at the history, you know, they can't even decide on whether it's a tornado, it's a cyclone, there's straight line winds. And it's things we still deal with today. But yeah, there was little to no warning on this one. People were going about their day. But, you know, the storm breaks and people are taking shelter. It starts with hail. They're talking the size of golf balls, the size of then baseballs at different times. But then this pretty, you know, large twister will set down in the southern part of Sioux Falls. And people are literally watching this, and it comes through, coincidentally, really in the same neighborhood of where this one set down near 41st Street and Kiwanis just the other night. It came ripping through the area, and the biggest landmark at that point was the 41st Street Bridge over the river, and also a dance hall called the Neptune that was down behind what would be Target today, close to the river. And it came through, it swept through the Neptune grounds. Now, the poor Neptune had been struck by lightning the year before, had been completely demolished. They had just rebuilt, held a huge dance in May of 32 to reopen. July 9th was not going to be so good for them.
Oh,
so
no.
Completely destroys the dance hall. And it picks up the 41st Street Bridge, tears it apart, sends one of the steel I-beams right through a cottonwood tree. Will continue its track south and really kind of skirted along that southern edge. Now, we often think that long ago, well, there couldn't have been that much down there, but that was South Sioux Falls. There were people living down there. There were businesses. It hit Sioux Skyways, which is where the Western Mall is today. Men jumped into a sand pit to take shelter, and they say it kind of lifted up around where South Minnesota Avenue is at the time, known as Hazelville. And unfortunately, that's where a fatality took place as well.
Oh, no. Do we know who died or how?
A young man. He was at the Green Gables Cabins, which was a little cabin down there in the trees down by the river. And he and his wife tried to take shelter underneath one of the cabins. And they think he was kind of crawling under the cabin to take shelter. And the tornado lifted up the cabin and then set it back down. Mm. And unfortunately pinned him underneath. And he later died from his injuries. So
tell me how we have photographs of this tornado, because again, photography is, I mean, now we've got people with digital cameras, you know, shooting out windows, which maybe they shouldn't be doing, but we have really good images of this thing.
Some really great images too. A young girl was leaving, you know, they had been at the park and they were, you know, they were leaving to get out of it. People who were in autos tried to make their way away from it. And, you know, she turned around and she snapped a great picture. I mean, it's like something out of The Wizard of Oz.
Exactly what it reminds you of.
When you look at it, absolutely. So, you know, so we got some really great images, but perhaps the most tangible evidence is, as I mentioned, we've got this I-beam that got stuck in a tree, and they cut the tree down, and the I-beam is still there. And the Neptune, of course, would rebuild, and they used to display this I-beam from the bridge sticking through the tree at the Neptune. And today, that same I-beam and tree trunk is sitting on the first floor of the old courthouse museum, and you can still come and visit it. And
many, many people do, because as you walk through the museum, it's pretty, it's a really interesting artifact. Kids especially go nuts over it.
I've worked for the museum for 23 years, and it has pretty much been on permanent display the entire time that I've worked there. And it's one of those things, especially when we get out-of-state tourists who come into the museum, and it's right there at a prominent spot right in the first floor, and people just come in, and they're amazed by the power. And that is the thing. You know, people are amazed by the power of what a tornado can do.
Right, and we still are. That has not changed, as you sort of see the strange remnants of things that you maybe feel like you should expect, but that you don't.
They're, you know, absolutely horrible. And unfortunately, we get a lot of photographs at the museum of the aftermath of a tornado, occasionally some clips of an actual storm itself. But they're really scary events when you read about, you know, people's experience of being in it and what they did. You know, it's a terrifying situation.
So as a museum, where do you get some of these, you know, how do you piece together the story of what happened? You know, was it newspaper reports for the time? Is it how you sort of piece together the story to tell this story to the community for over the years?
A lot of times, you know, you can start in the newspaper because, of course, people were there. They wanted to talk. They wanted, you know, they talk specifically about this storm. People started immediately calling the Argus Leader because they had hailstones in their yard and they wanted to have the record hailstone at their house. so they said the phones were ringing off the hook at the Argus Leader. But, you know, it's a lot of personal accounts, and I think that's one of the things. As a museum, we always say we can't protect all of the history. We can't collect all of the history of people. We need families and people to collect their own history. But a lot of that does get passed down, and it ends up in the museum. And we end up with some really great firsthand accounts of people in really interesting in historical situations. So, and that's our job, is to share that with people so that they understand.
All right. And as you look around and see people, I guess I don't even know, maybe your own house is a pile of sticks right now. But when you look around and you see people who are processing these three tornadoes now, what do you think they should say for their own family history, for their own family stories?
Well, you know, we're in the digital age now. Everybody's taking photographs of everything, and it's really hard. You know, print those photos out. You know, try to keep them. You know, we really worry in this digital age how much of this history, this photographic history, will still have in 50 to 100 years. But have some people write down some experience. We don't journal. We don't do diaries necessarily as much anymore. But, you know, try to think a little bit about what, you know, your family might want to think about, you know, 50 years down the road of what this experience was like.
Disasters are emotional, overwhelming, exhausting. But don't let vulnerability roll out the welcome mat for scam artists and unscrupulous storm chasers. Here's Jesse Schmidt with the Better Business Bureau with some tips. So these are some of the things that most people have heard before, but it's maybe you weren't paying attention because it hadn't happened to you yet. So what are some of the risks and overviews of general advice for victims of disaster?
Sure. So it's just like you said. You know, maybe you've heard this noise in the background before, but now that it's happened to you, what should I do? So we have some tips for you. We're going to tell you, first off, if you need to hire a contractor because you've had damage to your house either from the tornadoes or from the flooding, you want to make sure you're hiring somebody that is licensed, bonded, and insured. So you want to make sure that they're licensed with your city, if your city requires your contractors to be licensed. Do they have a bond available to them? And are they insured? And you want a certificate of their liability insurance. And you are going to take that, and then you're going to go seek out that insurance company's information on your own. You're not just going to follow what they say and assume that it's correct. But then you need to follow all the way through. Call the insurance company. Do they have a policy with them? And then ask them to send you a certificate of insurance. Then you're going to dig into it. Are they licensed, like I said, with the city of Sioux Falls? They're having you take a look at a contract. South Dakota residents know that we have a 3-day right of refusal of a contract in South Dakota. So let's say you signed a contract, but you're feeling uneasy about it. You might have a little bit of buyer's remorse. You can cancel that contract for any reason within 3 days. So make sure you've got a way to email them. You've got a way to leave a voicemail or send them a text message saying that, you know what, I want to cancel this contract. And then you will not be held liable to that.
I want to interject before we go further, because one of the things that comes up when this happens to you is that you're worn out, you're tired, you're impatient, you want to get things done quickly. And some of these people who are actually less than honest or straight up scam artists are going to lean into that, aren't they, and kind of play on your fear.
Excellent point, Lori. They're working. They know that you are off your game,
yeah.
Right? What may have been logical questions for you to ask the 2 days before, you said it. You are tired. You are overly emotional about things. It's draining. So, yes, they prey on people. This is what they do. They know the questions to ask. They have all the answers. So you think, oh my goodness, this, right? These are our knight in shining armor. They're going to help us get back to normal. But like I say, then in the harsh light of day, you're like, oh, something just doesn't feel right.
Yeah. And they're going to say, you know what? Everybody's busy. You're not, you know, you better lock in soon, because everybody on your street is getting work done, and you're going to get a good deal, and then go, go, go. And they come to your door. Sometimes do you deal with people who come to your door and knock on your door and offer to, get on your roof?
Yes, certainly in these instances, these storm chasers is what we call them, will come from all over, and know that there are good contractors in these organizations that travel. That's what they do. But there's some swarmy ones in there that you want to stay clear of.
All right. So
ask, do they have a South Dakota tax ID number, right? Are they charging you sales tax? This is what they'll say sometimes. They'll say, you know what, we're just traveling, so we're not required to register with the state. Well, that's not true. You know, everybody has to pay taxes. They'll tell you that, oh, the city is, or the county is not requiring permits during this special time. They have waived that. That is never the case either. Just take some time. Think, you know what? It's not going to take anything for me to call the county courthouse and see if they really are waiving building permits, or call the city or stop into City Hall. Are you waiving building permits during this time? They're going to tell you, no way.
No.
They want to make sure that the work you're getting done is work done well, and not just quick and dirty and it looks good on the outside, but it's not going to last.
Right. When we had roof damage in a previous storm years ago from a hailstorm, we started with our insurance provider. We called them first. Is that a good place to, we just started and said, okay, here's what we're wondering. How do we do this? And they really helped walk us through.
Absolutely.
Can that be a good place to start as well?
Well, you know what? They've been through this a million times. This is what they do for a living. So if it's damage that is covered by your insurance company, that is the first call you want to make, is to them. But if it's branches and tree removal and all that sort of stuff, that's not covered by insurance. So that's where they can kind of get you there. But yes, call your insurance company, find out what's covered and what's not covered.
In our remaining minutes, I want to touch on this idea of people soliciting donations for charity, and or people who want to help by giving, who just are searching out people to give money to. What are some of the key things that you're looking for as far as somebody making sure your money goes to the greatest effect and gets to the right people?
I am really glad you asked that question. We do live in such a philanthropic state, and we really care about our fellow South Dakotans. And so we want to make sure that we are giving money to where it will go the farthest. So I would tell you, in Sioux Falls, that's the Sioux Falls Area Community Foundation. They have a fund set up already to help people. The South Dakota Community Foundation does a great job as well. I would just say stay away from these GoFundMe pages during these times, unless you know those people personally. I would just stay clear of that. When you make a gift, you want to make sure it does good. You just want to make sure it doesn't do any harm.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you jump on these GoFundMe pages, they're not organized by the people that you think they are. And so stick with the people that you know. Go out to give.org or Charity Navigator. Both are local foundations in South Dakota. Do very, very well on those organizational sites that oversee charities.
That's our news podcast for the week. We hope that it served you. Are you looking for individual segments from the show? Well, you can find each segment, all 9 to 10 hours of In the Moment, on our website at listen.sdpb.org. If you want those segments sent straight to your phone, subscribe to the In the Moment Segments podcast. You can find it wherever you find your favorite podcast, and subscribe to this podcast for a weekly update on the news, the arts, and other stories of interest in South Dakota. Follow In the Moment on Twitter at @MomentSDPB. Do you have a story idea? Send us an email, inthemoment@sdpb.org. The In the Moment podcasts are produced by Josh Heyer. For Josh and Chris Loffrey and Steve Zwemke, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.